loved and so nice, we let her lack of performance go on for a year too long. Finally, we started getting the sense that our team was rolling their eyes when her name was put on a project. They really didn't roll their eyes, but there was this sense in the air that everyone knew she was getting a pass. I finally realized that even in the nicest of circumstances, when we allow someone to stay who isn't excellent, we aren't doing anyone any favors. We also didn't have specific clear corrections to give her. It was more this looming black cloud of incompetence. What happened when we finally gently let her go was amazing. That move sent a message to the whole team that leadership is actually competent. And the message was also sent that while we love you, you still have to perform with excellence. If you are too quick to fire someone due to performance issues, you can spread a spirit of fear and you will struggle to build loyalty. If you are too slow to fire someone due to performance, you become viewed as weak and out of touch with operations. Working this balance to never sanction incompetence and yet give the team member every opportunity to make it is one sign you are becoming a true entree leader. When you do this, you will see real unity grow along with loyalty. If you want a fabulously unified team and all the good stuff that brings, you will have to work unbelievably hard to avoid sanctioned incompetence. Unity and loyalty. So few companies have unity and loyalty that when your company does, it automatically stands out in the marketplace. Great talent stands in line to join your team because the culture becomes the stuff of legend. Great customer service is a natural occurrence in a company that has these values. However, I think most of all, this type of culture is tremendously satisfying to lead. You will not have all perfect days, but you will enjoy a richness of soul in your business that few ever experience. Caught in the act. Amplifying the success of your business through recognition and inspiration. In an opening scene of the TV show The Simpsons, Homer stands among his coworkers ready to receive the Worker of the Week award. Sure, he is going to get it this time because it appears he is the only one in the entire company to have never gotten the award. The boss comes to the balcony overlooking the workers to make the announcement, and as Homer waits expectantly, the award is given to this inanimate carbon rod. Homer then growls, "I'll show him, inanimate!" The writers of The Simpsons are geniuses, and we all know that. But in this scene, they really capture the essence of several rules and reasons to give your employees recognition. Recognition is important. Recognition has no power if diluted by everyone getting the same recognition the same way. When people aren't recognized and noticed, they become inanimate. Where there is no recognition, it is very difficult to have passionate, creative, motivated team members. Jacques Plante, Hall of Fame NHL goalie, said, "How would you like a job where every time you made a mistake, a big red light goes on and 18,000 people boo?" The feeling and reality of acceptance gives people the best opportunity to become their best. People yearn for approval. I have a fabulous golden retriever that may be the best dog I've ever owned. This dog will do anything to get approval. Sometimes I think you and I are virtually the same way. People yearn for appreciation. People yearn for attention. This yearning is so primitive that people will even act out negatively just to get noticed. They often become social morons just to be noticed in a social setting. The push for attention is so strong that it can lead even the most emotionally and spiritually mature person to act contrary to who they really are. Lastly, people yearn for affection. Anyone who has ever taken one semester of psychology has read about the studies of babies who had all their physical needs cared for, but were never touched or loved, and as a result, nearly died. So, how do we do recognition? The first rule of recognition is to simply bother to do it. Start making a habit of catching people doing something right. A sincere compliment is so unusual that when you begin giving them, you are immediately set apart as a leader and as a human. We have to fight the tendency to only course correct. Constructive criticism is often destructive. Why is it that when my child comes home with all A's and one C on his report card, I concentrate on the C? Why do I do that? Why do you do that? It is ridiculous to ignore the C, the area for improvement, but why do I focus on that instead of glorying in the five A's? I guess when we perceive ourselves as in charge, we somehow think that it becomes our job to correct. Course correction is part of a leader's job, but it's not their only job. And some bosses spend all their time finding what is wrong instead of what is right. Also, be careful to recognize activities and character traits you want all through your company. Remember, whatever you give recognition for will grow quickly inside your company. I once recognized a guy for being really radical in his reaction to a situation. Guess what? I immediately started getting a ton of radical reactions. Most not good. All through my company. Be very intentional to recognize what you want duplicated in scale, because that is what will happen. Look for opportunities to brag on and give honor to people. Giving one-on-one praise is effective, but giving recognition in front of others is even more powerful. The most effective recognition is given in front of people who the person cares about. With our young team, I often get to meet their parents when they visit our offices. Always when I meet mom and dad, I thank them for loaning me this one and tell them they are special. They are a rock star in our company, and they are really particularly good at... If you give that kind of sincere compliment to someone through their parents, anyone, even the ultra-sophisticated 40-year-old, will stand in front of you beaming. I am smiling just thinking about it. Recognize in writing. One of the entree leaders in our company started with us when we were small and very tight on cash. One day he stopped by my office and asked permission to order some embossed stationery. For people in big companies or who have a bunch of money, that might seem like a normal request. But we are blue-collar guys, and embossed stationery sounds, to guys like me, a lot like a frou-frou expense that is borderline crazy. However, he convinced me he would use it to follow up with sales leads, so I grudgingly approved the order. This young entree leader is not only a master at sending follow-up notes to prospects, he also sends hundreds of thank you notes a year. But best of all, he sends hundreds and hundreds of handwritten notes on embossed stationery recognizing people. He recognizes his team, his leaders, their spouses, customers, and even strangers in writing. It is really hard to do something right within view of this guy and not get a note of appreciation from him telling you how great you are. He has so inspired people all through our company that there is now a huge amount of embossed personal stationery for our team so we can try to copy him. I even got some. But to be truthful, I don't send many handwritten notes because of my handwriting and spelling. Occasionally, though, even I venture into that realm, inspired by the power of this simple gesture. Recognize people in writing. They will remember it. And don't be surprised to find your note framed when you visit their office. Recognize in front of peers for extra power. As I said earlier, recognition is most powerful when done in front of people who matter most to the person being recognized. So giving a parenting award to a CPA at a CPA convention might have almost no power. But giving that same award to that guy in front of his whole family at his church could have extreme power. Because of size, we had to change a wonderful tradition we had when our company was small. We had no money, and there were just a few of us, so our first company Christmas party was a home-cooked meal at our home. and later it became a dinner at a decent restaurant's meeting room. At these small gatherings, we did not give out lavish gifts. We gave out lavish praise. When it was time for our program, I would give a short state of the company talk, thank everyone, and then the fun began. I would bring each person up and praise them in detail for their work, their character, and their diligence. Often we would all be crying. You may think I'm a big softy, but it is so rare for someone to receive praise or give praise that it can become very emotional. Praise in front of their peers and their spouses and friends was a Christmas gift that was looked forward to every year. Did you know you can get a standing ovation from a group of only 20 people when you do this? Truthfully, it isn't you getting the ovation. It is the person being praised. That is truly powerful. Recognition doesn't have to be expensive. When I was 22 years old, I spent 3 months in a multi-level company. It was amazing how good they were at recognition. In the hyped-up, super-enthusiastic weekend meetings, awards were always given. The awards were a T-shirt. Yes, a T-shirt. But I have seen people making over $100,000 a year kill themselves to hit a production mark to earn a T-shirt of a particular color. It was not the T-shirt that mattered. It was the opportunity to be declared a winner in front of peers. Men and women will fight hard for the opportunity to be honored. Inspiration. Inspiration touches the emotions and causes activity. The whole operation must be inspiring, not a simple, single, small gesture. Zig Ziglar says, people say motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That is why we recommend both daily. We intentionally use 7 things to make sure the entire environment is inspiring. Number 1, vision casting. Where there is no vision that is understood and repeated to the team, there is no inspiration. There is not much of anything that lifts people more than believing in a dream, vision, and mission bigger than them. I pounded this in the first few chapters, but now pause and make sure you see that I am bringing this all together to create an organizational culture where people are fired up. Number 2, compensation. I will cover compensation in detail, including how to build it properly. If you want an inspired, fired up team, plan on paying them very well when they earn it. All a good team member wants is a chance to earn when they win. Number 3, creating a crusader mentality. Crusaders will lay siege to the competition. Crusaders will run into a burning building. Crusaders work while they are at work. Crusaders require strong leaders of huge integrity. Crusaders don't have to be driven like cattle. They run like wild stallions. Crusaders only crusade for something bigger than them. People are lifted up and inspired when they work for something bigger than themselves. The Bible says in Colossians 3:23, "Do your work as unto the Lord, heartily, not as unto men." Which again points back to the need to have a higher calling and communicate that to your team. Leo Buscaglia said, "Your talent is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Don't just be a trim carpenter. Be an artisan." Number 4, storytelling. We covered the power of storytelling in an earlier chapter. You have to tell the story of the history of the company. It is always inspiring. The history of the company is just one story, but you should also be continually building the story. One of the things we do in our weekly staff meeting is read mail from customers. I read hate mail aimed at me, so we all get a good laugh. I also read emails and letters bragging on the team. This predictable public recognition is unbelievably inspiring to everyone. It sends a clear message about our culture and our values and makes people smile. Try reading an email in front of the whole company that says, we wanted to say thanks to our rep, Amy. 1 week before we were to start our classes, we were hit by a hurricane and had major damage to our building. All of our class materials were destroyed. We called to tell Amy that our materials and location were destroyed, so we would be delaying class. We were not expecting what happened. Without hesitation, she replaced all of our materials free of charge. Wow! We are now holding the class at another location and wanted to say thanks for having people like Amy on your team. Here is what happens. Every team member sits with their chest sticking out in pride over our company, Amy, and how we were all just part of someone doing the right thing. Generosity to the customer, quick thinking, and doing the right thing on autopilot are justly rewarded. Applause breaks out, and Amy, who probably hasn't had a perfect life, is set for a great week. She has energy, smiles, and is ready to fight the week ahead. The team is lifted. Amy is lifted. And recognition, unity, loyalty, and communication have occurred. If you read 3 emails a week to your team, you will see mail bragging on your team start stacking up on your desk. They'll be hoping you will read one featuring them. You will even see internal fan mail come to your desk, where one team member is bragging on another. Remember, be careful to recognize what you want duplicated, because I can tell you from experience that you will see your culture shift almost immediately. Number 5, predictability. Explosive, erratic behavior by leadership does not inspire. On the contrary, not knowing what to expect is one of the greatest causes of organizational paralysis. When people can't predict how you will react, they freeze and do nothing. Amy knew she could be generous and give those class materials away and be praised, not shamed, for doing so, because over the years she had seen leadership do the same type of thing over and over. Leadership's predictable response gave her great power to act. Stated core values and operating principles help communicate how you intend the organization to run. Of course, you must live those values on a moment-by-moment, day-by-day basis. Number 6, passion. Monotones do not inspire. You don't have to yell or be a drama queen, but be aware of the importance of leadership conveying their passion to the team. In the name of sophistication, many companies and people have removed, by their words, deeds, and body language, the communication that they care very deeply about the outcome. Show people you care if you want them to care. Be willing to show emotion about issues that matter to the success of the organization. Please don't expect people to be inspired when leadership is asleep. Number 7, example. The entree leader knows that they set the tone, the speed, and the work ethic of the team. I have a friend who had a very successful small business, and his profit 1 year was just over $1 million. He is an excellent golfer and had always dreamed of making it as a professional golfer. Since his business was booming, he decided he could devote 3 or 4 days a week to his golf game so he could go pro. He really had the talent to potentially make it, too. The next year, while he golfed, his business net profit dropped to $300,000. Over coffee, he asked me what I thought happened. That was an easy answer. The example left the building to live his dream. As soon as he quit work, so did his team. As soon as he cared more about something other than business, so did his team. As soon as he became apparently apathetic, so did his team. I told him his little golf outing was a $700,000 experiment in human behavior, and he now had the answer to his question. Sell the business to someone who cares about it, or go back to work. If you come in late and leave early, please understand what that says to your team about your passion. Your work ethic sets the pace for them. You cannot expect non-owners to care more deeply about the outcome than the actual owner does. Your example in every part and every movement of the organization is huge. Conclusion. You probably have not heard anything in this chapter that has given you a deep revelation or that is so complicated or sophisticated that it is unreachable. Instead, it's likely you have been nodding like a bobblehead doll, saying to yourself that this all makes sense. The thing to remember about doing business well is that it isn't complicated, but you do have to pay attention to the details. So it is time for you to do a better job with recognizing and inspiring your team, yourself, and your family. Show me the money! Compensation plans that fire people up. Close your eyes and picture your best, most loyal, and favorite team member's face. Now picture their spouse's face, their children's faces, and even the face of their dog. In your mind, walk in their shoes as they come to work with you each day, as they are passionate about helping you win. If that person has been with you a decade and is an integral part of your success, they are virtually a partner of yours. Are they compensated like a valued partner or like a unit of production that can be tossed to the curb like last week's garbage? If you have team members like I am describing and you make a net profit of $10 million this year, would you be okay with paying them $1 million? Your team with varying degrees of tenure and varying degrees of maturity and varying degrees of talent and varying degrees of contribution are all having a Jerry Maguire moment every payday. They are shouting inside their spirits, "Show me the money!" Some of them have an unrealistic view of what contribution they have brought to the table, and some of them deserve for you to be more generous. Treat your team like you would want to be treated if you were in their shoes. Pay them. Jesus said, "Your treasure is where your heart is." What you spend money on says what is important to you. A company's compensation system is a clear reflection of its corporate values and culture. No leader wants a building filled with mindless clock punchers. Instead, entree leaders take pay structures seriously, identifying ways to encourage overall productivity and incentivize excellent performance. From profit sharing to commissions, bonuses to benefits, creativity is key when considering compensation. If you value your team, they will know it in a lot of ways. And one of the ways is that they'll be paid and paid well. Paying them well does not mean overpaying them based on contribution. Your team can tell what the money looks like and how it is flowing around them. They are not fooled. This chapter is about creatively compensating your deserving team. I have had plenty of team members over the years who thought they were more deserving than they were. That is a matter for the hiring and firing chapter. But the great ones should be rewarded with money. I have an acquaintance whose company at its high point had gross sales over $50 million a year. This owner's personal income was several million dollars a year. The owner had started in his garage 10 years before, and his key leaders had been with him from the start and were a lot of the reason for his success. He had about 120 employees and not one single employee, including leaders who had been there from the start, made over $100,000 a year. That may sound smart to some of you, but it is raw greed. Have you already figured out the end of the story? You guessed it. The unappreciated, talented leaders, virtual partners, got really tired of hearing how important they were and not seeing it in their checks. The company began to unravel as the talent left the building. You can follow everything I've said about team building and still fail at it if you don't say thank you in the paycheck. Recognition, unity, loyalty, and communication all start to have muted effects and even appear hypocritical if they aren't combined with generous pay. I love incentives that allow people to share in the win. If you work on my team and get up, leave the cave, kill something, and drag it in, I will share it with you. I would put the receptionist on straight commission if I could figure out a way. I want everyone to have a self-employed mentality, a sense of ownership, so they fight for the win. I am very happy to have commissioned people getting rich, and I am just as comfortable if they starve out due to their lack of work or effectiveness. Given my love for sharing with the team members who cause us to win, we have a complicated compensation program. Probably too complicated, but it conveys the message that winning is rewarded and losing isn't. Be intentional about what you value. Compensation plans are like recognition. Be careful to reward the activities you want duplicated. The team's activity will gravitate quickly toward how they get paid, so make sure to pay only for the things you want done. There are many ways to pay people. Listen to a few of them and see how you can use these different methods to pay your team. Salary. There are very few examples of salary-only positions that motivate and inspire people to win. Eventually, even the most content person will get tired of seeing people all around them prospering while they work just as hard. There are many positions in a company where a salary is the only logical way to pay people, but you have to work hard at creatively adding to that package. We don't have a single person on our team who is on salary only. Everyone participates in some way with the winnings. Profit sharing. Sharing your profits is a great way to say thank you or we appreciate you. However, this is very dangerous if done poorly. If done poorly, the employee can start to take the profit sharing for granted or start to see that money as a right, or worse yet, not even count that money. We've had all of these things happen, so we have worked really hard to defeat these problems. New animals. I formed a brainstorming group of some of our support people, assistants, IT people, and any other salaried position. About 15 of us spent days in my conference room discussing this issue. I listened and listened and finally began to understand that we had people in the room who were wired completely different than me. To oversimplify it, we had two types of animals in our company. Those like me were straight commission entrepreneurial types, the type who loves to walk the wire with no net. We are so confident in our ability that we are willing to take the chance of having no income in order to have a shot at a great income. Whatever you do, don't put a lid on this type of animal. We call this type of animal a tiger. They roar and run through the jungle, taking what they want. They will not be denied. In those meetings, I started to realize for the first time that our company was not all tigers. I was making assumptions and designing comp plans as if everyone was a tiger. I loved and appreciated our team members in administrative or support roles, and I thought we had hired tigers into those positions because they were all excellent team members. I was wrong. They weren't tigers at all. And they were, frankly, a little disgusted at being treated like tigers. One lady did a great job at getting me to this revelation. She said, "As an assistant, I kind of feel like a snooty waiter at a super expensive restaurant. I will serve you, but I really feel like I am better than you. I get great dignity and the thrill of accomplishment from helping you perform at a level you would never reach if I wasn't here. I don't need to leave the cave to kill something. Making the company and you better in spite of yourself is my win." As I started understanding this different kind of animal, I felt even more respect for them. We named them koala bears, because they may look cute and cuddly, but they have the ability to kill when you least expect it. In those discussions, I learned that recognition is huge with koala bears and that paying the profit sharing monthly would help them count it more than if we paid it quarterly. I also learned that with everyone, we have to talk about the DNA of our profit sharing so it doesn't become entitlement. The purpose of sharing profits is to get everyone feeling like a self-employed entrepreneurial partner. So we dramatically changed our profit sharing. First, we kicked out all the high-earning commission team members and leaders who were already getting great incomes from other comp methods tied to production. The smaller pool made more money available to the administrative and non-commissioned positions. We took some of the profit sharing away and applied it through the whole company, raising koala bear salaries to slightly above market. Then we transformed the quarterly bonus into a monthly profit sharing plan. The team does not know the percentage of profit we allocate because we may raise or lower the percentage year to year in order to accomplish our motivational goals. We developed and went through in great detail a formula figuring out how to allocate the money to everyone. We are all execution and performance driven people, so we thought time on the job or seniority sounded corporate. But as we talked through the formula and ran several trial runs, we discovered something about ourselves. We discovered that if someone is a lousy employee, they don't get to stay. So we don't have people who have been with us for years unless they are excellent. We also figured out that our culture honors the pioneers in our company. So the longer they have been with us, the more we feel we owe them, since they helped us get where we are. Consequently, and to our surprise, the formula that we came up with gives years on the job 50% of the weight in determining the team members' profit sharing. 33% of the weight goes to a personal score given for effort and attitude, and the other 17% is based on the profitability of the department the person works in. You will need to determine what you want to reward and what weight to give it, but I will tell you to invest the time to get it right. Otherwise, you might as well keep your money. The last thing we changed is how we give the profit-sharing money. Each month in staff meeting, before the checks come out, I stand before my staff and go through a very silly and elementary reminder. First, I remind them that profit-sharing means I am sharing some of my profits. I wait and make them finish the sentence in unison. I do this because I want to break off any sense of entitlement to this money. It does not need to become automatic. Then we continue the routine where I remind them that profits happen when revenues go up, said in unison, and expenses go down, ditto. Then I announce that our profits were up or down over last month and up or down over the same month last year, explaining further that their checks will be up or down over last month and up or down over the same time last year. We do this to remind everyone that ultimately we are all self-employed. So anyone who keeps expenses down is to be celebrated as much as anyone who brings revenue up, because it affects everyone's check, including mine. This sounds like a lot of trouble and a little bit juvenile, but we no longer have confusion about where profit comes from and what role everyone plays in making money together. We pay out millions of dollars in profit sharing every year, and I am thrilled to share it with my team that has caused us to win. I am thrilled to share because they count it. They are grateful, and the formula rewards the things we value. That is bang for your buck. I would love it if we had a secretary somewhere in our company who was getting two or three times what other companies pay that position, because our profit sharing rewards the number of years of excellence they have brought to us. And keep in mind, when profits are down, it really stings and gets everyone's attention, as it should. Commission. Commission is easy because it is all about incentive. There are several types of commission programs. Straight commission. Straight commission is simple. You make a sale and collect the money. Then you get your percentage. This means no sale, no money. Being from a real estate background, this is how my mind works. However, I have learned that often quality people need a little more support when they start with me to get their pipeline full and start making money. Salary plus. One way to deal with the issue of startup time is to have a small salary plus commission at a lower commission rate. The small salary can cover basic eating money so the rep can eat as they get started or if they have a down month. Keep the salary just over starvation level. The last thing you want is a rep who isn't money motivated. Draw plus. A draw plus commission is my personal favorite. The draw is like a salary that gives the rep a base to get started or cover a down month. The commission is at a good high rate, but isn't paid until the draw is repaid each month. So if there is a $2,000 monthly draw, until there is $2,000 in commissions earned, there will be no extra pay that month. If you are letting the unpaid draw balance roll over month to month, be careful not to let the draw balance grow too large. If it grows large, you may need to release a rep, or if they've been selling a new unproven product line, you might need to wipe the balance clean and start them over. A draw that the rep can't see themselves earning through becomes demotivating. We launched a new product, and the rep's draw balance reached almost $30,000. The rep started feeling like she was in debt. The large draw balance was not only mathematically demotivating, it also seemed to say to her every morning that she was a failure. If it was a proven product line with 10 other reps winning, we would not have let the balance get that high. We would have cut her loose earlier. But we had a great rep, and we were working the kinks out of this new offering. So we decided to wipe the slate clean and let her make some money. The relief on her face was awesome, and she has gone on to make all of us a lot of money. Proof that she's a good one. Some companies make a rep sign a note for the draw balance, which truly is debt. I am not a believer in that method. I think I should be willing to invest in the rep and the product line as the owner of the company. Some of our departments let the draw drop off and go to straight commission after enough time has passed and the rep has accounts to eat from. The length of time you allow the draw to run should be in line with the type of product or service you are selling. A rep for a lower price point product can usually fill their pipeline in 90 days. We call those rabbit hunters. The rep for elephants, products at higher price points, or products that are ordered less often, may need a draw for 180 days. You should be sensitive to find the balance between starvation and incentive. It will require some trial and error, but the thing to remember is that broke salespeople smell bad. They tend to pressure customers and take your brand places you don't want to go. For on-commission reps, you should never put a cap on what they can make. Many companies are so shallow, they will cap reps so they don't out-earn an executive salary. That is short-sighted and stupid. Don't shoot the producer in the wallet and expect them to stay. Profit and loss bonus. The profit and loss bonus is the scariest and most ingenious compensation plan we use. This plan is for entree leaders who run a major department or division for us. We set up each major area with its own P&L, profit and loss statement. The VP or EVP of that area is running their own company within our company. They receive a lousy salary and a percentage of the net profits paid the 15th of the month following the month being calculated. So they will get their percentage of net check for March on April 15th. Every single person on this plan is making more money than they have ever made in their lives. This plan is scary because you really have to be emotionally prepared for one of them to grow their business to the point they are paid $1 million or more. Wow. The best part of that happening, of course, is that for them to be paid millions, you would have to be paid millions and millions and millions. Still, this tests your philosophy on sharing with your producers. This plan is ingenious because the comp method causes them to run and view their department as their own business. They fight to manage cash flow, keep revenues up, and expenses down. Keep good people, fire bad people, and have a vision for the future. If you put the right people in this seat on your bus and you don't get greedy, you will have fabulous results. I have. These team members are not stockholders in the company. They have no stock options, but they have the potential to make fabulous incomes as if they were partners. Vesting. This last type of comp plan that we invented is for key leaders who don't run a P&L department. I want my CFO, my COO, and some of the key leaders to participate in the ups and downs of our revenues, and for that matter, to have a large portion of their great incomes be based on business performance metrics. Always in an effort to share and to incentivize, we have developed guidelines to vest certain key team leaders. This vesting gives them their salary plus an undisclosed percentage of gross revenues for the whole company or just from their division. We are very clear with them that this obligation is limited to profitability and subject to change as we need to make the numbers work. However, we almost never change it because, again, it is intended to pump people up about participating in the wins and losses. So if I mess with it all the time, they lose the feeling they have some say over the destiny of their income. Benefits. Most small businesses don't have the cash to provide much in the way of benefits like big companies do. I used to feel like I was at a competitive disadvantage when trying to hire people. You really don't have a disadvantage. The type of employee who takes a job for the insurance and the 401k match as their primary motivation isn't the type I want on my team. I want people with a self-employed entree leader mentality. I want people who value the family atmosphere and fabulous culture that we have built, which very few big companies have. So the huge companies with the big benefits packages aren't really competing with me for talent because I offer a completely different world. They might not want the type of person I want, and the type of person I want won't work for them. The first benefits we offered were free products of ours. Later, we were able to barter with different advertisers, and we would share free meals at a restaurant with our team members. We just didn't have the money to offer traditional benefits. Health insurance. We finally got enough team members that the premiums for our little group insurance plan were less than an individual policy. So we put a health insurance plan in place. But the team members had to pay 100% of their insurance. Then we agreed to pay $25 a month toward their insurance 1 year, then $50, then $75. And every year or two as we grew and grew more profitable, we paid a little more until we were paying hundreds per month. We made the decision to never pay 100% of health insurance. The premiums with a small company go up dramatically every year, and we want our team to always have that self-employed feel, that dose of reality. If you pay 100%, that's nice, but your cost can double in a single year, and your team won't care. 1 year, we increased what we pay by $50 a month, but the premiums went up by $75 a month. So we announced the $75 increase and let that sting for a few minutes before we announced that we were increasing our benefit by $50. That created gratitude rather than entitlement. I know healthcare is a touchy subject, and you can do whatever you want with your company. This is what I do with mine. Disability insurance. Look into disability insurance. It is the only insurance we pay 100% of. We do this because most people go underinsured in this category and, frankly, because it doesn't cost much. Group rates on disability insurance are still very good. Cool and creative benefits. Do weird things for your team that promote things you value. About a third of our team runs the local country music marathon or half marathon every year. We refund their registration fee if they wear a company marathon t-shirt and finish the race. We can usually get the t-shirts donated with some sponsor logos, which make them look cool and make them free. We pay for warehouse club membership cards and gym memberships, We got a great deal with an online legal website, so we furnish a free will for every team member. We did the same thing with ID theft protection, so we furnish it free. We rent out the local movie theater for private showings just for our team and their families every so often. We started organizing the occasional company-wide potluck lunch during the work week. The relationship building created such synergies that we started catering a free lunch once a month. As of this writing, we furnish lunch once a week. Every month we announce birthdays in staff meeting and have cake and ice cream afterward. We buy season tickets to our local NFL and NHL teams and give them away in a drawing every week. We do a lot of really cool stuff, but when we started, we didn't do anything. We didn't have the money. We had to get creative to say thanks, and as profits increased, we allocated a percentage to human resources programs that we constantly try to dream up. Ministry Week. A huge home run benefit was the decision to give team members an extra week of time off if they used it working for a certified nonprofit. So, we have people working in orphanages in Haiti, programming websites for homeless shelters or domestic violence shelters, translating for missionaries, building Habitat for Humanity homes, and any other possible ministry you can think of locally or around the world. They qualify for this extra week after they have been with us a year and after submitting the activity for approval. We had to define it because some people wanted to count ministering to their bulldog while sitting on the couch. Education. John Maxwell says, you will either invest in your team to learn, and they might leave with your free education, or you don't invest in them to learn, and they will remain dumb and stay. When the web was in its early primitive years, Thomas, an assistant, came to me and asked if he could build one of these things called a website. He promised to do it in the evenings and not take up valuable work time because he knew we had no idea what he was talking about. He built our first little site, put it up, and it actually made some money. Who would have thought? He began spending more and more time on it, and finally he showed up in my office and told me we should invest in his taking a class. He wanted me to pay $4,500 for a class, plus airfare and hotel, for him to go to Oklahoma City to a week-long cold fusion class. I didn't know what cold fusion was, still don't. And we thought $4,500 was a huge sum of money. But the World Wide Web was starting to look like it might be a big deal. So we sprung for Thomas to become a cold fusion expert. 3 weeks after he got home, he had revamped everything. He was an on-fire programmer. Then one day I looked up, and he was standing in front of my desk with this weird look on his face. Dave, I have a huge problem, he said. It seems a dot-com company had just offered our little cold fusion expert $90,000 a year, and we were paying him less than $30,000. He was a good man, so he felt conflicted about leaving mere weeks after we paid for his training. But I always take a deep breath and do for my team what I would want someone to do for me. He had two small children, and I couldn't pay him that kind of money. So I smiled and helped him pack his desk, blessed him, and wished him well. Ouch. Sometimes you pay for education, and they leave with your training. But the alternative is to not pay for education and have them stay and stay dumb. If your organization wants to place a premium on personal growth and knowledge, then put your money where your mouth is. We have also expanded our education program to give a couple of scholarships to graduating high school seniors who are our team members' children. My goal is to someday be profitable enough to pay for every team member's kid's college to a certain level. Do you think that might attract some talent? Wow. HR Fund. We allocate a percentage of profits to reinvest into the team. This fund pays for education, 401ks, benefits, and things like marriage counseling that I mentioned earlier. We use this fund to send flowers to funerals or buy airline tickets for family emergencies. We use this fund to do all the things I have just discussed in this chapter and much more. We have an HR fund and a profit-sharing fund to invest in and love on our team that are both calculated as a percentage of profits. This is how you put your treasure where your heart is. Conclusion. Develop a generous spirit towards your team in general, not a spirit that tolerates or overpays underperforming people, but be generous to the people who cause you to win. Realize your team is your secret weapon. Bad companies become so worried about Q1 profit that they squeeze their secret weapon and kill the culture that brings profit. When in doubt, be generous. You will live with fewer regrets, and you will profit more by attracting and keeping extremely talented and passionate people. Mastering the rope. Delegation, the best way to build a business bigger than you. When my oldest daughter was about to be our first child to leave home and head to college, it was a time of reflection and an emotional time. The first time as parents, we were going to set one free. The mom and dad eagle were pushing one out of the nest and looking on with sadness and pride as she spread her wings and flew with more majesty than we realized she had. As our children were growing up and starting to make those first teen decisions on their own, we talked to them a lot about trust. Humpty Dumpty is hard to put back together, and so is trust. As young Ramses, they were told clearly not to bust the trust. If you say you are going somewhere, that better be where you are. If you say you are doing something, that better be what you are doing. As dad, I am all-knowing and wise, and you will be discovered if you lie. At least we convinced them of that idea as if it were fact. We explained to the kids that the more they kept their word and the more we observed them making great decisions, the more freedom they would have. Visualize that I have a rope attached to you, and the more worthy of trust you have proven yourself, the more I will lengthen the rope. If you lie or exhibit bad peer-based decision-making, the rope will be shortened. Every teen yearns more than anything on the planet to be treated like an adult. So if you want more rope, more freedom, then act more and more like an adult. So if someone comes in later than promised, the rope is shortened. And the next time there is an event, the answer might be no. Parents who let teens run around with unearned adult freedoms are naive and stupid. They grow children with no boundaries who generally end up with serious problems. Parents who use a very short rope or a straitjacket preventing teens from ever developing the emotional skill of wise decision-making are controlling. They raise children who go crazy the first semester at college because they don't know how to make wise decisions. That week, we were packing the car for the first one to fly away to college. I had a great idea. I stopped by the local drapery store and bought some beautiful rope. I coiled the rope and tied it with ribbons. One purple ribbon for her spiritual walk, a red one for academics, a white one for sexual purity, a yellow one because she could feel safe that home was waiting, and an orange one because she was going to the University of Tennessee, go Vols. We gathered the whole family in the rec room and presented her with her rope. I told her that we were very proud of the mature young woman of God she had grown into. I reminded her that because of her life, she had earned our trust. She was trustworthy. I told her she was moving several hundred miles away, and now she would be making her own decisions about every area of her life. We were sure she was capable of doing that. We told her that we were standing behind her now, not over her. This event was a rite of passage. We all cried. It was wonderful. 2 months later, we visited her dorm room, and there, on her bedpost, was the rope. Wow! I thought that corny deal would be in the bottom of a box. No, instead, the rope had become legendary in that dorm. As the story spread, girls she hardly knew would drop by her room and ask to hear the story and see the rope. Powerful. The art of delegating to your team is somewhat like lengthening the rope for your teens. I realize you are dealing with adults, or you should be, and so there are differences, but at its core, delegation is the lengthening of the rope. Last, not first. This chapter on delegation is the last chapter in this audiobook, not the first. I have covered up until now how to properly build a company and a team. Until you have done the things I have covered so far in this book, your organization is not ready to be delegated to properly. Beginning leaders always ask me how they can properly delegate. As a young owner, I wanted to hire people quickly and have them carry out tasks and goals I didn't want to fool with. I wanted people to read my mind and do things I didn't like doing. Delegation may be the most misunderstood and abused subject area of leadership. When you delegate to someone improperly, you will make a huge mess and add more drama to your life than you can stand. But when you properly prepare your organization's culture, hire and keep only the right people, build unity and loyalty, recognize achievement, and creatively compensate, then delegation will become the joy of your life. As a fully developed entree leader, you will get great joy from your organization as it runs smoothly, makes a profit, and has a richness to its soul. The magic formula. You were looking for the magic formula for how to delegate. Here it is. Are you ready? In order for an entree leader to successfully delegate, they must come to trust the team members' integrity and competency. Wise people trust other people with big, important things only to the extent they have spent time with them. The more important the delegation, the more time you will need to spend making sure the person gets it. Important can be relative. What is important for one company might not be important for another. When we were first starting and had no money, what we paid for copier paper was important relative to staying open. Now, if someone screwed up and paid double for our paper, it wouldn't close the company. Not to say we don't watch details, but I used to order the paper. And now I really do not stress about who orders the paper or what we pay for it. If you run a small to medium-sized business and you turn over all the financial decisions and accounting duties to someone you don't have a long track record with, you are a candidate for embezzlement. Before someone works with your money, know them a long time. Their reference from the last job is not enough. When I said earlier that the building of a team and an organizational culture in which delegation flows is a lengthy process, it's because it takes time to trust in people's integrity and competency. Other than spending large blocks of raw time to create a relationship that fosters enough trust for you to be able to delegate, you also use follow-up and reporting systems. We could hire a new payables clerk and allow them to write our checks the first week. We could do that not because we have come to completely trust them with our checkbook in a week, but instead because they are not on an island, meaning we have tons of systems and supervision. Integrity. You can only delegate important, complicated tasks to someone to the degree you can trust their integrity. That is why I will spend zero time trying to redeem a team member who steals. I just fire them instantly. Once they steal, I can't trust them with anything. That is why I will instantly fire a team member who's had an extramarital affair. If their spouse can't trust them, there is no way I can. Trust for the purpose of culture and delegation is essential. I can only delegate to someone to the extent that I trust their integrity. Integrity is more than simply telling the truth and not stealing, although those are foundational. My friend Dr. Henry Cloud has written an entire book giving us a view of what integrity is all about, entitled Integrity. In his book, he explains that the word integrity comes from the root word integer. An integer is a mathematic term from grade school. An integer is any whole number. A number that has no fraction is a whole number. A life that has no fraction to it is a whole life. Integrity, Henry explains, is truly a life lived in wholeness, completeness. If you or I act differently with some people than with other people, it is hypocritical. If we are not generally the same all the time, we are fractured, split,